insulted. But that insult was taken by him as Krishna's mercy, although he knew that Duryodhana, the one who hurled the insult at him, was not engaged consciously in Krishna's service. Rather, he was against Krishna, very specifically against Krishna. And yet, as Duryodhana, by insulting Vidura, brought his own ruination even closer. In other words, Duryodhana was under the control of Maya. Still, he was being used by Krishna to liberate, to free Vidura from the entanglement of his palace life. So that wonderful purport 16 and 16 explain this dual nature, this dual yet inconceivable nature of Krishna's energy known as Maya. As Mahamaya, this energy which controls everything in the material world, Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharani Prakriti Kriyamana Nigunai Kamani Savrasha. So on one hand, Maya is making everything work, moving everything within the material world, and that Maya is under Krishna's control. And on the other hand, Yoga Maya is making everything work for the devotee. And this is actually the challenge of our existence, to gain the shelter of Krishna's internal energy. Because it is through Krishna's internal energy that the devotee serves Krishna. So Vidura saw the manifestation of Krishna's internal energy. And it came in such a heavy, difficult way. And it was not that Vidura was saying, how nice this is, it's just Krishna's mercy. But no, he felt the words of Duryodhana to pierce his heart. Like arrows shot into the heart. He experienced it like that. Yet he understood that Krishna's mercy was there. And he left his bow at the door. He could understand that through the material energy, no matter what he would say, Vidura would say or do, Duryodhana was heading very quickly, like a moth heads into the fire towards his destruction. Because, why? Because he was taking an opposing side to Krishna's devotees. He was taking an opposing side, therefore, to Krishna. And Krishna is always victorious. So Duryodhana, when Vidura told him, you should give back everything to the Pandavas, you should give them what they deserve and stop being so offensive. He told Dhritarashtra, you should reject this Duryodhana, who is like a blind eye that's only business. It can't see. An eye that is blind cannot see. Its only business is to give the one who's carrying it trouble and pain and difficulty. So Vidura spoke very frankly and compared Duryodhana to that and said, get rid of him. And Duryodhana retaliated and said harsh things about Vidura. And Vidura understood that this was the time for him to leave. This was Krishna's indication. Painful as it was, he understood that it was Krishna's indication that he now leave the palace. Now he had been living in that palace for his entire life, surrounded by the comforts of the palace, the facilities that the palace offered. But yet, he was not attached because he was a devotee. That meant his attachment was to Krishna. And then when he left very simply, willingly, seeing it as Krishna's mercy. And then he went on pilgrimage, on parikram. So in text 17, by his piety, Vidura achieved the advantages of the pious Kauravas. So he had lived due to his punya, his piety. He had lived in this opulent circumstance, the palace. But yet, after living, he gave up all opulences and lived as simply as a pilgrim, as a mendicant, as a renunciant. He did not take anything with him from the palace, his means of sustenance, like a bow. He did not take any gold. He did not take anything. Because when one goes on pilgrimage, especially at this time in one's life, he's not going just for a 3-day pilgrimage or a 1 week or anything like that, he's giving up the palace. He's giving up that former life and taking to a new life. And that new life meant a complete dependence on Krishna. This is the mood of a pilgrim. This is actually practically a paramhamsa. So after leaving Hastinapur, he took shelter of many places of pilgrimage. So by traveling, just depending upon Krishna, whatever Krishna would give him, he would accept. He visited one pilgrimage place after another, and in each place, he went to the holy places, the temples, which are the Lord's lotus feet. He took shelter of many places of pilgrimage, which are the Lord's lotus feet, with a desire to gain a higher order of pious life. In other words, he did not want to be limited by the material piety that had brought him material wealth, because material wealth and a materially good situation is also born of piety, but of a different kind than spiritual piety. Spiritual piety brings spiritual advancement, opportunities for spiritual advancement, while material piety brings opportunity for material advancement. So he wanted the highest kind of piety, and that type of piety is obtainable by going to holy places. When one sees the deity, offers obeisances, offers a prayer, hears the Srimad Bhagavatam, does some service for holy persons, circumambulates Tulsi, circumambulates the deities, observes the festivals, hears Krishna's name, chants Krishna's name, offers a flower to Krishna, offers incense to Krishna, mentally, physically, brings water to Krishna, does some cleaning of the temple. Any of these things brings a spiritual piety, which is like, compared to like putting money in our bank account. And what happens? You put a penny in today, and 2 cents in tomorrow, and 10 cents in the next day. And every day, putting in something. Some days maybe a little more than others. Some days still more. And then eventually, by doing this regularly, increasing our spiritual credits regularly, what happens is one becomes practically, amazingly, one suddenly becomes a wealthy person. Especially for spiritual credits, what is recommended? Preaching. Telling people about Krishna. Because Krishna explains in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that makes one dear to him. And he says, Yaidam paramam guyam mad bhakteshu vidasyati. This is the param kritva, the supreme spiritual activity. This is the supreme spiritual activity. And Krishna says, no one will be more dear to me than someone who explains this message of Bhagavad Gita to the devotees. What makes the non-devotees, or those who think themselves of non-devotees, into devotees? This adds so much spiritual piety. So therefore Prabhupada would say, as actually his spiritual master told him, that this preaching is, do it, it is good for you and it is good for others. So, with a desire to gain a higher order of pious life, he traveled to holy places where thousands of transcendental forms of the Lord are situated. There were so many deities there. Just by seeing the deities, it is so wonderful to see the deity. Why? Because we see their form, we offer prayers to them, we can offer anything to them. Even in our mind, even if we have nothing else. Anything meaning we could offer them garlands of lotus flowers, we could offer them rubies and pearls in our mind, we can go in our mind to the Ganga and fill up a golden pot with water and bring it to the deities. So to see the deity is an opportunity to do service for the deity. And any kind of service to Krishna brings spiritual benefit. So Vidura went on parikrama, on pilgrimage. So Prabhupada in his purport asked an interesting question. At that time, Lord Krishna was personally present in the world, and Vidura could have at once approached him directly, but he did not do so because he was not sufficiently freed from sin. One cannot be 100% devoted to the Lord unless and until he is completely free from the effects of sin. Yesham Tvantagata Papam Janamam Punyakamanam. Prabhupada will quote that next. So we wonder why it is that we cannot remain fixed, perfectly fixed in deep devotion. Why do we become distracted? Why can't we just make at once a determination that I'm going to love Krishna and serve Krishna and give up everything else? The reason we cannot do this is that one has to be fully pure to do this. Even one cannot focus his mind perfectly in his japa, because the lower modes of material nature, they come and beat us and harass us and maul us practically. Passion, ignorance, one after another, passion, ignorance, giving us, filling us with desires, making us sleepy. The mind is racing, then we get sleepy. So hard to concentrate. Why? Because we are under the control of passion and ignorance. This is, means sinful reactions. So he could not directly approach Krishna because of this. So he wanted to increase his piety. Vidura was conscious that by the association of the diplomatic Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana, he had lost his piety. So therefore Mahaprabhu said, when asked, what is the behavior of a Vaishnava? What is the behavior of a devotee? His reply was, a satsanga tyagi Vaishnavachar. That one should give up the association of non-devotees, because one gets contaminated by that, especially with those like this who are actually working directly against Krishna's desire. So he thought he lost his piety and was therefore not fit to associate at once with the Lord. So of course there is the element of this is all Krishna's leela too. So Vidura was actually Yamaraj and he was playing a part as well. So he went on pilgrimage and he visited many, many temples. He began to travel alone. Why is it good to travel alone? Yeah. Yeah. Huh?
Less baggage.
Less baggage. Yeah. Also, there's in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, there is an expression with the young girl who had, she had bangles on her hand, and when there's more than one bangle, when you move, it makes a lot of noise. So similarly, when there are more than one person traveling together, you can't help but yakking and just talking about this and that. But when one is alone, one feels alone. One feels somewhat lonely maybe. And then one thinks, oh, where is my dear friend, Suridam Savabhutanam Krishna? So that helps develop one, in one, a longing for his friend, Krishna. So he began to travel alone, not depending on anyone but Krishna, thinking only of Krishna. So he was actually in that, he had that capacity to think only of Krishna. So he was actually not at all had any impiety. He was thinking of Krishna, only of Krishna. This is actually Paramhamsa, the supreme position of life, where one is just wandering around, just fully depending on Krishna and thinking about Krishna. Actually, we are completely supported by Krishna only continuously, but we're unconscious of this. So when one does what Vidura is doing, he's acknowledging it and developing, cultivating the complete consciousness and dependence upon Krishna. So he traveled through various holy places like Ayodhya, Dwarka, and Mathura. He traveled where the air, hills, orchard, rivers, and lakes are all pure and sinless, and where the forms of the unlimited decorate the temples. Thus he performed the pilgrim's progress. Prabhupada explains the wonder of the Archa Vigraha, the deity form, in this purport. These Archa forms of the Lord may be considered idols by the atheists. But that does not matter for persons like Vidura or his many other servants, Krishna's many other servants. The forms of the Lord are mentioned here as Anantalinga. Such forms of the Lord have unlimited potency, the same as that of the Lord himself. There is no difference between the potencies of the Archa and those of the personal forms of the Lord. The example of the postbox and post office may be applied here. The little postboxes distributed all over the city have the same potency as the postal system in general. The duty of the post office is to carry letters from one place to another. If one puts letters in postboxes authorized by the general post office, the function of carrying letters is performed without a doubt. Similarly, the Archamurti can also deliver the same unlimited potency of the Lord as when he is personally present. There are so many wonderful stories, pastimes of deities that are mentioned. When one goes to holy places, one often hears that the deity did this and the deity did that. And Chaitanya Charitamrita describes how the Lord Gopal came to Madhavendra Puri in a dream, and Gopinath also came to him in a dream, and Lord Jagannath sometimes it describes how he would go out to battle for the king, his devotee. So the deities can do wonderful things. Why? Because they are Krishna. Similarly, the Archamurti can also deliver the same unlimited potency of the Lord as when he is personally present, because he is Krishna, the deity is Krishna. Vidura, therefore, could see nothing but Krishna in the different Archa forms. So everywhere he went, he saw Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. And he actually, when he saw the deity, he was seeing Krishna due to his great devotion. And ultimately, he was able to realize Krishna alone and nothing else. So while traveling on the earth, He simply performed duties to please the Supreme Lord Hari. He had given up all other considerations of his life. He was no longer bound to anyone. He was completely free of all other social obligations, family, relatives, political, saving this. He just had it on his mind to please Krishna. Nothing else. So that's perfect. This is pure devotion. His occupation was pure and independent because he didn't need anything. So he didn't have to depend on anyone. He would go to a place, maybe he would beg. Sometimes he would people supply food to the pilgrim. Sometimes there are charity booths to supply food for the pilgrim. Sometimes he might have to fast. Sometimes he might dig up some roots somewhere or eat some fruits off of some tree and drink some cool and refreshing river water. Whatever Krishna provided, he would take. Independent means dependent fully on Krishna. And although he was adrift, he was constantly sanctified, purified by taking his bath in holy places. Although he was in the dress of a mendicant, like a poor beggar, and had no hair dressing nor a bed on which to live. So simple, from going from the palace to this situation is so wonderful. And because he was wandering around looking like a mendicant, not even putting oil in his hair, not combing his hair practically speaking, with no covering, not even lying down on a bed at night, just sleeping somewhere, anywhere. Thus he was always unseen by his various relatives. He went, and of course his relatives, the Kurus, were saying, let us find where Vidura has gone. Let us find him. Has anyone heard of Vidura? Where is he? Has any news? Any news? Because he was so beloved. But no one. He practically vanished for 35 years. No one knew where he was. He did not leave a trace. Thus, when he was in the land of Bharadvarsha, traveling to all the places of pilgrimage, he visited Prabhachetra. At that time, Maharaj Yudhisthira was the emperor and held the world under one military strength and one flag. So Maharaj Yudhisthira was the king at that time of the world. And actually, Vidura traveled for approximately 35 years he traveled on pilgrimage. Approximately somewhere around that. Just wandering here and there, thinking about Krishna, not a care in the world, not worrying about where he would sleep, whether he had enough money, whether he had too much money, just nothing, dependence on Krishna. This is actually freedom from anxiety. People are trying to accumulate to free themselves from anxiety. But actually, the more one has, the more one's anxiety increases. While full dependence on Krishna is the only way to become free from anxiety. Regardless, if one possesses tam kinchana gochara, if one superficially possesses unlimited wealth, but is considering it Krishna's, and using it in Krishna's service, or one possesses not a penny and still depends on Krishna, still that person will be free from anxiety. Just being poor doesn't free one from anxiety. Actually, Prabhupada would say that poverty brings out the worst qualities in a man. But dependence on Krishna brings out the best qualities in a person. That is the factor. So at Prabhas, it came to his knowledge that all his relatives had died due to violent passion. Just as an entire forest burns due to fire produced by the friction of bamboos. After this, he proceeded west where the river Saraswati flows. So, in the place of Prabhachetra, which is now in Gujarat, in the state, the western state in India, Bharatvarsha, India, of Gujarat, he heard some very sad news that all his relatives, that means the Yarus and the Kurus, had all left this world. And actually he heard that Krishna too had left this planet, because this was the place where the Yarus fought and killed each other in a fratricidal war. And also we heard from this, it's not clear, because it's talking about fratricidal war, so he probably heard of the other fratricidal war at Kurukshetra, where the two sides, the Pandavas and the Kurus, who were basically brothers, they also killed each other, where practically the whole Kuru dynasty was finished, wiped out. So he heard everything there. So he had been wandering around without knowing anything about what was happening in the world. There was a great battle. He didn't know anything about it. He was just wandering around, Krishna, 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 Krishna. And then he found out about it, and he headed towards the east. After this, he proceeded west, where the river Saraswati flows. But he headed towards, as it explains after a while, on the banks of the river Saraswati, there were 11 places of pilgrimage. So there's a list of 11, and he performed his rituals there. And then there were many other temples of various forms of the personality of Godhead Vishnu, established by great sages and demigods, and they all had the chakra on top, because the chakra, all the temples have the Vishnu temples have a chakra on top, because the temples of Lord Shiva have a trident on top, the trishul. So the devotees can see the temple, the chakra, and in Jagannath Puri it's especially obvious that from practically anywhere in the town you can see the chakra. You can see the top because the temple is so high. So from anywhere you see that temple, and you see the top of the temple, and you see the chakra on top, and offer obeisances just by seeing the chakra and remember the lotus-eyed Lord who carries the chakra. Chakri, his name, because he carries the chakra, Krishna. So, thereafter, he passed through the very wealthy provinces like Surat, Suvira and Matsya, and through western India, known as Kuru Jungle. At last he reached the bank of the Jamuna, that means he was going east, where he happened to meet Uddhav, the great devotee of Lord Krishna. So, we can just imagine. First we'll read the purport, and then we'll speak about this meeting between Uddhava and Vidura, and how Uddhav got there, happened to be there. And we'll talk a little about who Uddhav is. So Vidura, after all this traveling, after so many years of traveling, he reached the bank of the Yamuna, which Prabhupada explains is around Gurgaon. No, it's in North India, North Central India, just above Delhi, where the Yamuna is, and Gurgaon, that's Punjab now, yes? Very close to Delhi, yes? Gurgaon.
Yamuna? Gurgaon is just Delhi itself now.
You mean Delhi is now Gurgaon? It's expanded. So, here's Prabhupada's purport to this. So Vidura in his traveling, he reached there and he met Uddhava. The tract of land comprising 100 square miles from modern Delhi to the Mathura district in Uttar Pradesh, including a portion of the Gurgaon district of Punjab, is considered to be the topmost place of pilgrimage in all India. Why is this area considered so wonderful? Topmost place, because in India, in every district, there are holy places, pilgrimage places, and temples. Everywhere, everywhere. So why is this the topmost? This land is sacred because Lord Krishna traveled through it many times. From the very beginning of his appearance, he was at Mathura in the house of his maternal uncle Kamsa, and he was reared by his foster father Maharaj Nanda at Vrindavan. There are still many devotees of the Lord lingering there in Vrindavan in ecstasy in search of Krishna and his childhood associates, the gopis. It is not that such devotees meet Krishna face to face in that tract of land, but a devotee's eagerly searching after Krishna is as good as his seeing him personally. So this is very wonderful. In that deep remembrance and longing to be with Krishna, in that deep feeling of separation from Krishna, Krishna is actually present. So there's much philosophy about this point, which we will not describe right now, but Srila Jiva Goswami describes it in detail in his Sandarbhas, how the aprakat or unmanifested lila of Krishna can be entered into by those who have, in this world, who have deep, deep separation from Krishna and who love him fully. Indeed, they see Krishna everywhere. How this is so cannot be explained, but it is factually realized by those who are pure devotees of the Lord. The Goswamis of Vrindavan, they would travel all throughout Vrindavan, saying, He Radhe Brajadeva Ke Jalalite, He Nanda Suno Kuta. Kuta means where. Where are you? Hey, oh Radhe, oh Srimati Radharani. Hey Radhe. Where is Nanda, the son of Nanda Maharaj? Lalita Vishaka, where is it? Just wandering around all the time with no other thought except Kuta, where? Where are they? Where are they? 24 hours a day, basically. And in that deep, and obviously it cannot be imitated because we try to do that, and after some minutes, look at our watch. How many minutes I've been doing this? How many people have noticed how advanced I am? Anyway, and what time's prasadam? I'm going to be late. What happens if they've already served out prasadam? Or so many things, so many thoughts. Oh, there's a mosquito. Oh no. So we can't imitate, but this is exalted, the most exalted consciousness. Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Narottama Das Thakur describe this consciousness in their songs. Just wandering around, just Krishna, 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 Krishna. So in that full searching, Krishna is actually there. So philosophically, one can understand that Lord Krishna and his remembrance are on the same absolute plane. So Prabhupada said, you can't explain it, and now he explains it. Because it can be explained philosophically, but for someone to actually experience it is very, very difficult. It has to be realized, actually. So Krishna and remembering Krishna are on the same absolute plane. And the very idea of searching for him at Vrindavan in pure God consciousness gives more pleasure to the devotee than seeing him face to face. Such devotees of the Lord see him face to face at every moment. So it is not the same as seeing him face to face, but it is not different from seeing him face to face. As confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, Premandana Charita Bhakti Velochanena Santar Sadaiva Vridayesu Velokayanti Yam Shayama Sundara Machinta Guna Sarupam Govindamari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Those who are in ecstasy of love with the Supreme Personality of Godhead Lord Shyama Sunda, Krishna, they see him always in their hearts due to love and devotional service rendered to their Lord, to the Lord. They're always, not a moment do they not see him. Not only do they see him one time, Prabhupada once said, oh, I don't have this tape, unfortunately, but Prabhupada said very, very early, it was in the 60s, he said that this love of Krishna is the magic wand. Because when we think of a magic wand, you can touch something and it changes its form. And the ugly duckling maybe becomes a beautiful swan, or the metal turns into gold or something, or the poor princess turns into the beautiful wealthy princess or whatever. He said it's like a magic wand, prema, premanjana, when one's eyes are covered, smeared with the anjana, the ointment of love for Krishna, then one not only sees Krishna one time, but one sees Krishna everywhere one looks. So this, therefore, it's like a magic wand that allows one to see Krishna. So both Vidura and Uddhava were such elevated devotees, and therefore they both came to the bank of the Yamuna and met each other. So Uddhava, we heard how Vidura got to that place by the bank of the Yamuna. But how did Uddhava get there? And who was Uddhava? Uddhava was a contemporary of Lord Krishna, an associate of Krishna in Dwarka. And he was very, very intimate with Krishna. Very, very dear to Krishna. A dear, dear friend of Krishna. And Uddhava was so intelligent. After the battle of Kurukshetra, it was getting near the time for Krishna's earthly lila to be wound up, completed. And the demigods visited Krishna in Dwarka, and they all offered wonderful prayers to him. And then Lord Brahma submitted the idea to Krishna that it was time now for him to leave this world, because his duty, that which he had come for, had been completed. So around that time also, actually, I think it was before that time a bit, Krishna had set the seed for his departure by, there was some very pious activities performed by many great sages in Dwarka, in the house of Vasudev. After these activities were performed, these sacrifices were performed, Krishna suggested that the sages go to Pindaraka, which is still there right now, a holy place, a place named Pindaraka, and therefore perform pious activities because Kali Yuga was going to begin very soon. So they went there. And while they were there, the sons, or Krishna's sons, or the young members of the Yadu dynasty decided to play a trick on the sages. So Samba, one of the sons of Krishna, he was very beautiful, and he put some cloth underneath he put on a sari and put some cloth underneath and covered his face and made believe that he was a young girl. And all the young boys got together and they said, oh, this young girl is going to have a child. What will she have, a boy or a girl? And in this way they were trying to tease and trick the sages. But the sages, they became very upset. And they cursed Samba and said, what you have under there is a iron club, which will mean the end of your dynasty. So the boys then looked and they saw there was an iron club there and they became terrified. So they went back to Dwarka, and this was actually Krishna's lila. And they didn't tell Krishna, they were too afraid, but they told Ugrasena the king, who said, don't worry, boys. and they ground up the club into fine powder and threw it in the ocean. And there was, and of course, when you're grinding, there's one piece because you're holding it, you can't get. And he threw that into the ocean too, that one piece. And those iron filings later washed up in the place of Prabhachetra, and they turned into bamboo cane that became iron hard in Prabhachetra, where Vidura had visited. And that one piece of iron was eaten by a fish who was caught, and that fish was caught and sold to someone by the name of a hunter by the name of Jara. And he took that iron piece when he opened up the fish, whatever, or he bought the fish somehow or another, and he took that iron piece and said, "Oh, very nice, an arrowhead, and I will use this arrow." So, as fate had it, as fate means Krishna's desire, it was time for Krishna to leave this world. And this is described in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. And very inauspicious, Krishna was in Dwarka, and very inauspicious signs began to occur, and everyone started becoming frightened. And Uddhava, who was very, very intelligent, he went to Krishna and said, "Krishna, I think that these are all occurring because in Dwarka nothing bad can happen. I understand by this that you are planning to depart from this world. And I beg you, please do not leave me here. Please take me with you. I don't want to be in this world without you." So when he told this to Krishna, his dear, dear friend, because Krishna could not keep secrets from his dear friend, somehow they get it out of him. So Krishna said, "Yes, you are correct. But you should not stay in this world after I leave, because after I leave, Kali Yuga will begin. And Kali Yuga is such a horrible age. There's so much sin. There is hypocrisy. There is misery of every description. So you should leave." But Krishna began to consider, "I have a mission for you. I want you to go to the holy place in the Himalaya mountains called Bhadrikashram. And there, I want you to give a message, a teaching, to the great devotees and sages who live there." Uddhava said, "I'm not capable. You please teach me." So Krishna then spoke what is known as the Uddhava Gita, which is very wonderful, and it comprises so much of the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, and there are very, very intimate and wonderful descriptions of the love of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna in there. Krishna was so fond of Uddhava that he sent Uddhava, of all the associates in Dwarka, he sent Uddhava to Vrindavan to console the gopis, and to watch the love that the gopis had for him. He sent Uddhava. So now it was time for Krishna to leave, and he sent Uddhava to Bhadrikashram, and he instructed him on the Uddhava Gita. And then he sent them away, saying, "7 days from today, a great flood will come and completely inundate, the ocean will rise up and inundate Dwarka. So you leave now, go to Bhadrikashram." So Uddhava left, and at the same time the omens continued, the horrible or the very frightening events continued, and Krishna called all the residents of all the elders, senior, honored and respected leaders in Dwarka together and said, "This is very bad that these are occurring, so we should all go to Prabhachetra and perform some pious activities to counteract these bad things." So we leave immediately. So all the residents of Dwarka, practically speaking, almost all of them left, and the Matajis, the ladies, went to a different place. And the men, all the members of the Yadu dynasty, went to Prabhachetra. And they performed their ritual activities, pious activities, and then they began to drink some like wine made out of rice, and they became intoxicated and they began to argue with each other. This is all Krishna's plan, because he was going to leave this world and he wanted the Yadu dynasty to also leave before him. So they began to argue with each other and they began to fight with each other and they wanted to hit each other. So what did they pick up? They saw nearby these iron hard canes growing by the water, which were the ones that had grown from the iron filings, and they began to beat each other with these canes and kill each other. And they were so intoxicated and so mad that they began to fight even with Krishna and Balaram. And Krishna and Balaram, eventually, they killed each other, and Krishna and Balaram finished everyone and sent everyone back. Then, after that mission was done, Krishna or Balaram sat down next to the ocean and through meditating, he left. And then Krishna said, now it is time for me to leave. So he sat down underneath a young banyan tree. Now, at that time, Uddhava had heard, he had left for Bhadarika Ashram, but he had heard that Krishna and the other residents of Dwarka. From Bhadarika Ashram and went to Prabhash. And there, while Krishna was leaning against this young peepal tree, asat tree, he came and saw Krishna. And we're going to hear what Krishna, their conversation, that comes up a little bit later. So this is what Uddhava, because Uddhava will tell Vidura this a bit later, so we won't speak about this right now. But right after that, after Uddhava saw Krishna for the last time, he again, and got some final instruction from him, Maitreya Muni came at the same time by Krishna's arrangement. And then they both left, and then Krishna, the hunter Jara, came, and he thought Krishna was sitting with his left foot up, and he saw the lotus foot of the Lord, and he mistook it from as a deer, and he shot that arrow which had the arrowhead, the iron arrowhead, from the remainder of the club, and of course it didn't hit Krishna really, and it didn't pierce Krishna really, and it didn't kill Krishna really, but in this pastime Krishna left this world in that way. And the demigods, when it describes in the Bhagavatam how it's such a mixture in this that part of the Bhagavatam, it's such a mixture of such deep sadness, but because it's Krishna's pastimes, it's still nevertheless very sweet. And all the demigods, when Krishna was leaving, he left behind his Vishwarupa, which means his universal form, his like his material form, but it's not exactly his form, but he left behind the Vishwarupa. And the hunter went back to Godhead. And then right before Krishna left, before that happened, Krishna's chariot driver Daruka came. He found Krishna, and Krishna gave him instructions to take everyone out of Dwarka. Arjuna, take all the queens and Vasudeva and Devaki and bring them to Hastinapur. So we heard about that in the 14th chapter of the first canto, when Arjuna arrived back after he had heard from Daruka how Krishna had left this world and the Yadu dynasty was finished, and then he arrived back and told Yudhisthira. So we heard about that in the first canto. So in any case, Dwarka was completely inundated with water, and when Krishna was leaving, all the demigods were in the sky in their flower aeroplanes, and they were hoping that Krishna, they were hoping that Krishna would come with them, and they would take Krishna to their own planets on his way back to the spiritual world. But Krishna didn't want to be involved in all these social dealings at this time, so he just went. He didn't want to get involved in social obligations, it describes. He just went. So at that time, Uddhava was sent by Krishna to Badrikashram. So he returned going towards Badrikashram. So he was in the west of India and he had to go to Badrikashram, which is in the north center of India. So he started traveling east. And we can just imagine what he was experiencing at this time. He had been with Krishna for so many years. He was so deeply attached to Krishna. And he was so much so that he wanted to leave this world when he understood that Krishna was going to leave this world. And Krishna left and left him some mission. So he was completely enwrapped in feelings of separation from Krishna, such love for Krishna. Krishna had just left. And he was just thinking about Krishna and Krishna's service and Krishna's mission, and he was wandering on his way to Badrikashram, fulfilling the desires of Krishna. And there, as he was practically speaking, it's at the about 120 kilometers from, after traveling of more than 1,000 kilometers or miles, he was just 100 kilometers from Haridwar, the where the Himalayas more or less begins. And then it's, you have to go so far up to get to Badrikashram. But there he was at the Yamuna River, just south of the Himalayas. And there, while feeling complete separation from Krishna, who does he meet? Vidura, who has been wandering around for 30 years, and he has heard, because he had just stopped through Prabhachetra also, so he's heard what has happened. Or actually, maybe my timing is a little mixed on that, but we'll find that a little later. But he heard at least about the Kurukshetra war, but I think it will say later that he knows about Krishna is leaving also, and the Yadavs leaving. And then he, Vidura, who had been traveling for so long, great, great, great devotee, associate, personal associate of Krishna, he meets Uddhava, such an intimate friend and dear devotee of Krishna. So what a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful meeting. And Uddhava is full of ecstasy, ecstatic separation from Krishna at this time. So they have just met. So tomorrow we'll, Krishna allows, continue with this wonderful pastime. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
When you said Krishna left behind his universal form, could you explain that in more
detail? Yeah. That we had actually heard about Krishna's universal. There was a lot of talk about Krishna's universal form in the second canto. That it is not exactly Krishna's form, because Krishna has no material form. Krishna's forms are all spiritual. Yet, the universe is inseparable from Krishna. Although Krishna is separate from the universe is a manifestation of Krishna's energy. And for the creation of the material universe, Krishna manifests from Govardhaksha Vishnu, he manifests like a form.
Is this so that the living entities with material eyes can see?
But this, when Krishna manifests the universal form, it is so that the universe can be created. It's almost like it's a very, very subtle aspect of matter.
So
in any case, so what's described, that when Krishna leaves, he leaves behind the universal form.
Wasn't it already there before he came?
Yes.
So
But he leaves behind the universal form. So he didn't take everything with him.
Wasn't necessarily like a personal form.
Well, it seems like he left a personal form in a universal form in the shape of a personal form. In other words, it was like it wasn't his form, because his forms were all spiritual. So he didn't leave behind his form, but he left behind like a likeness, something like that, out of matter, something like that.
So in the spiritual world,
yes,
that's where his true personal form.
That's where Krishna is, and Krishna's form is. Yes.
And when he comes to the material world,
he comes in his spiritual form.
But does it take on not necessarily material qualities because they're all spiritual to him, but does it take on some sort of quality whereby the living entities can perceive him?
Yes, they can perceive him, but what's happening is he's allowing the living entities to perceive him, his spiritual form. That's what's happening. But they're not. It's happening by his grace, but he doesn't take on a material form that they can perceive. I think that was the essence of what you wanted to know. Does he have a material form that material people can see?
Even if it was sort of material or anything, it wouldn't be material because...
But Krishna has no material form.
Yeah, I'm trying to get the difference between the form he has in the material world and the form he has in the spiritual world.
See, Krishna personally, there's no difference between Krishna's form in the material world and Krishna's form in the when Krishna enters the material world, because actually Krishna never is in the material world. He never touches the material world. He only stays in the spiritual world. But when Krishna comes to the material world, what it means is that the living entities can see him. But he's in the spiritual world. It's like the curtain is lifted, something like that, for some time. But when he leaves, Krishna Svadham Upagate, when Krishna leaves and goes back to his dham, the spiritual world, he leaves a material form, a universal form, so that people can say, oh, Krishna's left, he's dead. Something to bewilder atheistic people, basically.
Did Balaram leave the same sort of form?
I don't think it describes it, what Balaram did. There's something with the serpent in Antishesha. He just... Chalo.
And Lord Chaitanya, what happened
here? He just... It describes, and I think the Bhakti Ratnakara, there's so many different stories about it, but it is said in Bhakti Ratnakara, I believe, that he went into the Gopinath temple, took the Gopinath temple, and went into the deity.
The deity?
Huh?
Is it a big deity?
So big. So beautiful. You've not seen Tota Gopinath?
He hasn't been to India.
Huh? Yeah, I hope so. He's not only big but beautiful, and he's sitting in a lotus position. Generally, the deities of Krishna, holding a flute and standing, Shibanga Lalitam. But he's sitting. Very beautiful. Any other questions? It's a hard one. It's not easy to understand that one. But Krishna never has a material form. Okay, it's 8 o'clock, so let's stop. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. So tomorrow...